Please join me in welcoming Mike Hines.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's truly a pleasure to be here with you in Washington, D.C. I see some familiar faces because some of you were here about 2 years ago when we had the Media Summit, which was my first Media Summit, and then also some of you were in Germany last year. And I can say that I've been involved in this business now altogether about 8 years, and whenever I talk to some colleagues who have been in this business 20 or 30 years, they tell me, Mike, we've never seen such exciting times. Exciting times for agriculture, and obviously also exciting times for BASF. And some of this excitement is obviously also translating into numbers. We had a little bit of a roller coaster ride in 2006, quite some improvement in 2007, and this improvement is also continuing to translate into our first quarter and 2008 numbers, as you can see on this particular chart, where our sales in constant exchange rate increased by 11%, but what's even more important, our business results, which means our EBIT before special items, increased in constant exchange rate by 21%, which means that we significantly raised our earnings. I think what's also important is that amongst the big agrochemical companies, we were the only ones who in four consecutive quarters were able to increase prices, and I think that is also something worthwhile to mention. So it doesn't really come as a surprise that we continue to be committed to our ambitious profitability target, which means that we continue to say that under optimal conditions, we should reach an EBITDA margin of 25%, which we have reached already in the years 2004 and 2005. And we also expect, like I said, to reach under optimal conditions in the future. Now, for 2008, we do expect higher sales and earnings, primarily through volumes, but also through price increases, through the sale of our innovative type of portfolio. There are a couple of negative effects which we continue to see in 2008, which are primarily related to exchange rates. When you look at the weak U.S. dollar, but also the weak yen, and then lately also the British pound, which has impacted our business. And I'd like to remind you that while we are very positive, a lot of the stuff that we have started to sell has not really reached the ground yet, so we have to make sure that we don't have any unfavorable type of weather conditions until the end of the year. Now, what we have seen are huge rises in commodity prices, and this has also stirred some controversy, and Stefan has already mentioned it, that some of it is also due to speculation, which you can truly see on this particular chart, where you see on one hand the number of crude oil contracts that were signed at the New York Mercantile Exchange, and then also the equivalent number of world or soybean crop. And it's true, soybean crop at the end of the year has been traded 20 times its annual type of production. So it's true that when there is a certain portion of speculation in some of these commodity prices. And what truly has happened with the U.S. dollar weakening and the financial crisis in North America, financial institutions started to shift some of that money into oil, into gold, and also into soft commodities. Now, where do we believe soft commodity prices will end at the end of the day? I can tell you we don't have a crystal ball, but we look at some fundamentals, and that is really the stock-to-use ratio. And there we see, and let me just explain this chart a little bit to you, just so we're clear. What you have on the left side there, these numbers on that vertical axis, is stock-to-use ratio, which would mean if the number would be zero, we would basically consume what we produce. And you see that the stock-to-use ratio of all soft commodities combined has been declining on an annual basis. And as a result of that, obviously, commodity prices went up. Now, we have seen some positive signs the last couple of weeks in terms of expected production on wheat and also on soybean that should alleviate a little bit the crop prices. But in the medium to long run, when you take the speculation out, and when you look at some of the mega trends that were already mentioned, soft commodity prices should stay at a rather high level, higher than the historic average. And for 2008, we can truly say that we have no margin of error. If there were a crop failure, it would send market prices up even more. Now, we already spoke about speculation, so this is a piece of the prices. We also spoke about renewable resources such as biofuel. Then certainly rise of emerging markets, which are changing their diet and they're moving more into animal type of protein. We looked at the growing world population, and we should also take a look at climate change. Now, while climate change is not rising demand, it is certainly causing a certain distortion. And what we are trying to do is to develop some genes that can help to alleviate that pain in the future by being able to be so that you are able to grow certain crops under adverse type of climatic conditions. Now, I think that we won't be able to find one magic bullet to alleviate the pain in the future and to make sure that we have sustainable food supply. I think there are a couple of things that we have to work on, whether it is infrastructure or energy conservation that was already mentioned, or finding new type of energy sources. Certainly breeding continues to be an important role, but also agrochemicals and plant biotechnology. Those two pieces are certainly part of the solution and not part of the problem. And while Hans Kast is going to talk about plant biotechnology, I'm going to focus on agrochemicals, which also in the futures will be needed in order to secure harvest, then also to improve plants, improve productivity, and also making sustained agriculture, making modern agriculture sustainable. Now, the business of BASF is innovation, and we always continue to say that the business of our crop protection business is innovation cube. Innovation, innovation, and innovation, this is the lifeblood of our business, and it can truly happen in more than one area. It can happen as a result from research and development, but also from going new ways or in what we ultimately do. Now, it would take a long time to show you an example of each individual diamond, but I will provide a couple of examples by first focusing on innovation from research and development. Before we take a look at our pipeline, let's take a look at our proven track record in the past, which had led to the highest share of patent-protected sales in the industry. And this is kind of important because it provides a strong platform for our growth and for the introduction of our pipeline products. And it has also provided our customers with a steady flow of new type of products and is important whenever we are talking about generic type of defense. Now, what's more important, obviously, than the past is the future. Here you take a look at our powerful pipeline, where we can truly look eye to eye with any one of our competitors. And what we have done is show this pipeline in a slightly different form, adapting the view to what our competitors do by dividing it into three buckets, into a launch phase, an in-launch phase, and an in-development phase. And in the in-launch phase, we have one kind very important active ingredient, which is F500, which was initially developed for septoria control in cereals in Europe, then gained some major importance in the rust control in Latin American type of soybeans, and now plays a major, major, major role in our plant health type of efforts in North America. Now, the in-launch bucket is a five-year bucket. Why 5 years? Because it takes a number of years to introduce compounds and get registrations amongst various countries in the world, and also to expand into several crops. And there we have one prominent active in that category is certainly Boscalid, an active that we introduced the last couple of years in field crops and specialty crops. And in the in-development bucket, so the type of actives which we have not introduced in the marketplace, there is one important active that is also going to play a major role in North America, one herbicide which we are going to use in field crops and in non-crop, which is called Kixor. So when you look at the combined peak sales potential of the launched, in-launch, and in-development phase, you're looking at about 1.8 billion euro. Now let's take a look quickly at our investment into herbicide technology and then also in Kixor. I remember fairly well In 1996, we had the launch of Roundup Ready crops in North America. And at first, our organization was a little bit in denial. They said, it's not going to happen, there will be yield drag, et cetera, et cetera. And then a couple of years later, we were sitting together and we asked ourselves, should we actually exit herbicide research? And we came to the conclusion that if we do that, it would take a long, long time to get back into the game. And we also believed in the renaissance potential of herbicides under the constant use of glyphosate over glyphosate and over glyphosate. So what we did at the time was we started to shift our resources a little bit more to fungicides and insecticides, but continued to do focused type of research activities in herbicides by looking particular into cereal herbicide, broadleaf and broadleaf and also grass compound, and looking for glyphosate gap-filling type of technology. And we are really proud that we were able to submit the registration packet of this Kixor herbicide at the end of January for a trilateral review between Canada, Australia, and the U.S., and we plan to launch this particular compound by 2009-2010, and it should have blockbuster type of potential with peak sale well above 100 million euro. When you look at this second type of category, new segments or new type of business models, I would like to really highlight plant health. BASF was truly a pioneer. I know there are a lot of companies that are talking about plant health these days, but BASF first introduced this concept in North America in 2005. We also reported about this the first time when we had our global type of investor conference in Bordeaux in 2005, where we highlighted some opportunities in this particular marketplace. And I think we did a lot of effort and a lot of field trials, particularly in North America, in order to make this business concept a success, which is really counting on the physiological effects of F500, and later Peter Eggers will explain this a little bit more in technical type of terms, which in these days is generating a higher yield for our pharma type of customer. Now, we also are the only company that have label registration for plant health effects granted in Brazil, in the UK, and also in the US. And we are looking to expand this particular type of business into other crops, away from the large field crops, also into specialty crops, where we have also seen some very promising type of results. Another area that we are starting to put more focus and emphasis on is seed treatment. Obviously, seed is seed, and the value of seed is becoming more important in the future. And with that, the farmer would want to have some kind of insurance to put on that particular seed. So we see seed treatment in the future growing much faster than the rest of the agrochemical market. And we went into this business with the acquisition of the Bayer Fipronil business, which also brought us a series of fungicides which can be used in seed treatment. We invested in a technology center in our headquarters in Limburgerhof to also test all the actives that we have available to see if they are systemic and they can be used for seed treatment. And we do see strong synergies of our seed treatment type of portfolio with our plant health type of activities. There are about several products that we are going to launch around the world, nine of which will be launched in the U.S. market within the next 2 years. Now, and the last example on innovation is about looking at new type of tools. And there we have a tool that we developed together with Rockford Maps. Now, you might remember some of the old times when actually one of our retailers received a fax. He gave it to a pilot. The pilot kind of steered his plane with one arm, looked at the fax with the other arm just to make sure where he would apply his fungicides. And what we did is we worked together with them to be able to give to those pilots electronic mapping type of tools in order to save time, to save fuel, and also make sure that we apply the product where it should be applied. So it has been a win-win type of for growers and aerial type of applicators. Now, Stefan spoke about innovation in crop protection is needed for these 5F, which is food, feed, fuel, fiber and also fermentation. And at the end of the day, innovation is the lifeblood of our business, because through innovation, we want to make the farmer more productive. Once we make the farmer more productive and increase his yield, we are also contributing to food safety and food supply in the future, because we want to make sure that abundant, healthy, and affordable food not only is, but also maintains a reality. And we are certainly committed to reduce the environmental impact of farmers. Thank you very much.